Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Mike Lynch.
What's going on? This is Rashad.
This is the Sports Sunday podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It is now brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
Fire up for pro football.
That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
This is Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad.
Wouldn't kill you. We'd play some competitive sports once in a while, wouldn't it?
Oh, would that make you love me?
Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
Games have begun on the red zone that we have up on the TV here. We are going to keep you up to date on what is happening as it happens.
I love the Browns jerseys.
Yeah, they're great. And it's so funny. They're you either love them or you despise them.
Those are so dope.
Yeah, they're cool. I like the Browns jerseys a lot.
I'm going to get one, bro.
Good. Please don't do that.
I'm going to get a Browns jersey.
Please don't do that.
Mayfield?
No. Stop goading him on.
I think you should get either a Hyde or a Mayfield. Maybe a Chubb jersey.
No, that would be funny.
Do not get a jersey of a team that you are not a fan of. Frankly, I'm done getting jerseys myself anyway, but if you're going to get a jersey, at least get it of the Patriots, please.
Ooh, there you go, ODB.
OBJ, another one-handed catch. Nice.
It's kind of what he does. I feel bad for him, you know, low-key, just because his team is so trash and he's so good.
Well, let's use that as a transition because that was what the topic was going to be. The big story of the day today in the NFL is Odell Beckham Jr. being very short when asked is Eli Manning the problem of the Giants offense? He goes, I don't know. And he went on to continue to say, let me open it up real quick. Like I said, I feel like he's not going to get out of the pocket. We know Eli's not running it, but it is a matter of time. Is it a matter of time issue? Can he still throw it? Yeah, but it's been pretty safe. And it's been, you know, cool catching shallow routes and trying to take it to the house. But I'm, you know, I want to get over the top of somebody. So he's basically saying Eli Manning can't throw the ball over them, their mountains anymore. And he can't run, which he never really was able to run. But he also used to be able to get at least move out of the pocket a little bit. And is it Eli Manning's fault that the Giants offense is so bad, or is it the coaching? Is it time for a quarterback change? What are you thinking here with the Giants?
It's been time for a quarterback change, and they had an opportunity to get Sam Darnold in the draft and chose otherwise. They had an opportunity to even get a Josh Allen, you know, in the draft, and they still chose otherwise. They wanted to rock with Eli, you know. I think they should have just did, when we kind of talked about this, what they did with Kurt Warner, you know, just draft the guy and let Eli – you know, play and show him how to do things. And if Eli is good, then you don't lose anything. But when he starts not playing as well, you're able to insert, you know, new rookie quarterback here. And they didn't do that. So now they're struggling. Saquon Barkley is going to be a good NFL player. You need a quarterback to win in this league, though. And as you look around the league, you look at the all of a sudden the optimism that's in Cleveland. And why? Because they have a quarterback. Now, albeit he threw four picks, you know, in his last game. But still, they're really confident about what they have moving forward. You look at what Josh Allen was able to do a couple weeks ago, and I think there is some hope for Buffalo to say, well, this could work for us, you know, somewhere down the road. And I think you're in a division that, man, seemingly has gotten better, you know, everywhere. You know, the Eagles, defending world champions. The Cowboys, you know, they at least have their quarterback situation figured out. You know, what are you doing, you know, for the Giants? I think that's the big issue. We don't know what Washington is doing. That's the one franchise. It's like they're up in the air right now. But you don't want to be up in the air with Washington. Even then, they're playing better football than you are.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, too, is we liked the Saquon Barkley pick because we think he's a great player.
I didn't.
But, well, we like Saquon Barkley.
Yes, but it's a bad pick.
He's a great player. But seeing it now, having pick number two, when you have Eli Manning playing as poorly as he has been playing and showing recently that he's not the same quarterback he used to be, not taking one of the top quarterbacks available there is moronic. Absolutely moronic. And it's proving it out right now because they've got nobody. So they're going to be bad this year, or they're going to be mediocre this year, I should say. And I guess they're going to hope that they're going to have a good enough record that they get Justin Herbert next year or something like that, right? They just get one of the good quarterbacks that goes out next year, and maybe that's their plan because then they'll have both Barkley and the quarterback, but the NFL is a win-now league, and they're not winning now. That's for sure about drafting Barkley.
But you know what you won't have if you don't play your cards right? You won't have Odell Beckham Jr., and I think that's the issue right there. You talk about receivers that are too much of divas to come across the middle because they don't want to really get that contact. He's made a career of taking 3-yard slants for 60-yard touchdowns. Like, that's really who he is. And he's just saying, man, I want to beat guys over the top. Like, I'm good with coming across the middle because Eli, you know, can't throw it that deep. But he's a track star. Give him the ball on the outside and send him on a streak or a fly and let him do what he does. And he's saying, I just want somebody. You look at what Patrick Mahomes is doing in the cannon that he has, and you look at what Baker Mayfield is doing and, you know, back shoulder throws, and he's like, why don't I have that right now? Where's that for me? And you're looking at the prop, arguably, and you've heard me say it on the show, I think Odell Beckham Jr. is the best receiver in the league, and that includes Julio Jones, that includes Antonio Brown. I believe in my heart of hearts that he is the best receiver in the league, and he's the one of those guys that doesn't have the best quarterback. You give Odell Beckham Jr. Matt Ryan, please. Matt Ryan's MVP every year.
Well, he does sort of have that in
Jones. But he's got a guy in Julio Jones who doesn't get a lot of touchdowns, doesn't get a lot of pay dirt. Julio Jones,
in fact,
for as great as he was last year, he only had 6 touchdowns.
And for Julio Jones is on pace this year to set the record for receiving yards in a season and have 0 touchdowns.
There you go. And that's who he is.
Isn't that crazy?
You know, at the heart of Julio, that's really who he is, or really who Matt Ryan is. Man, you give Matt Ryan Odell Beckham, please. I'm running the same play almost every time.
I think part of the problem, too, is the Giants' offensive line sucks. And yeah.
They haven't built that franchise well.
And if I want to turn that locally, if Justin Herbert is the guy that they want to get for quarterback next year, then is he, who we all want to see succeed in the NFL, is he going to be the next David Carr and just get sacked over and over again because they don't have an offensive line? If that's the case, there's other bad NFL teams that'll also likely want to get Herbert or any of the other good quarterbacks coming out of college this year. But you have to be able to have a good enough offensive line if you're going to get a rookie quarterback and succeed. And the Giants' offensive line hasn't been good for years.
No.
Has been awful.
It hasn't. And that's been the Achilles heel. And that's maybe a reason why Eli's played so poorly. He's been knocked down a lot. I used to give Eli a lot of passes.
And he can't move either.
No, he can't. He's not going anywhere. You know, Peyton, it was weird to see Peyton move at the end of his career or at any point in his career, but especially as he was a Bronco and he would escape the pocket for, you know, 10, 12 yards. It was almost comical to see him do that. Like, Eli still can't do any of those things and really was never able to. So not super surprised on that, but I used to give him a lot of passes because a lot of his interceptions were usually, you know,
they were like
balls,
tipped.
And yeah, balls that weren't caught by the receiver and they just kind of fell into the defender's hands. Like, I can't be mad at him for those. But now he's just really throwing to the opposite team. And it's like, man, okay, it's time for you guys to sit Eli down and get someone else in there at this point because you're not going to win anything. And I just fear if you're the Giants, you lose what I consider the best receiver in football.
Well, but he is going to stay, isn't he? Did they sign the deal?
Is that deal signed?
I think so, right? Jesse, Beckham signed, correct?
Yeah, no, he's signed an extension.
He's locked up. You're good to go.
Well, that's good. So he's at least there for another 4 to 5 years. How long is the deal for Jesse?
I think it was a 5 or 6 year deal.
I believe it was a 5 year deal.
Okay, yeah. So he's at least there for another few years. So, and saying that, man, you got him in his prime, in his 20s. Make sure you get him a quarterback that's going to be able to put some points on the board.
Well, and that was why I was so surprised when their new GM came out and said, no, Eli's our guy, and they didn't draft a quarterback. Because you got to keep those younger guys happy. You can't stick with Eli beyond when he's ready to be stuck to, if you know what I mean. He's too old, and he's not a starter in this league anymore, consistently, at least. He would be for some teams, but I think you can get a better quarterback, I guess, is what I'm saying. All right, let's break. Coming up next, West Coast bias time. Let's take a look at Oregon State. They had a really close game against Washington State through 3 quarters yesterday, then the defense continued to be bad. So we'll talk about that, the excitement level that you have, the confidence level that you have. That's all next here on Football Sunday on 1080 The Fan.
It's time for some West Coast flavor.
Wrong side! Left side!
Yes, this is the center of the football universe.
Don't oversell it.
I'm not selling anything.
Come on, stop milking it.
I
dying in here. My lungs, I'd scream at you.
This is West Coast Bias, an in-depth look at the NFL's Western teams on Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
All right, that music and intro means it is time for West Coast Bias, and we normally do something with the NFL, but we are going to do something with college instead.
We're shaking it up.
We're shaking it up because we got distracted by a good conversation about the NFL in the first segment, normally when we do the college stuff. So let's get to Oregon State in this segment today. Oregon had the bye this week. Oregon State played Washington State, played very, very well offensively, and frankly stayed in the game all the way until the fourth quarter. They were only losing 35-30. At the end of the third quarter, Oregon State was. And Washington State's played well. We thought, I assumed Washington State would win big in this game. And they wound up winning big, but that's because in the fourth quarter they scored 21 points and Oregon State could barely keep up, only scored 7. Oregon State, basically the season has been the same story every game. Their offense looks very good or looks much improved.
No, it looks good. You can say very good.
Their running game looks amazing. And Jamar Jefferson, once again, 138 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns. Also had a really long touchdown run called back earlier in the game. But the passing game, not looking great. Connor Blount did not have the best game. He was accurate, but only threw for 172 yards. Jack Coletto got in there and threw a couple passes as well. But no receiver had over 100 yards catching. And it was basically it's the running game is great right now for Oregon State. And the passing game is passable. But the defense, oh boy, that's a whole other story. The defense is Swiss cheese. It stops nobody, it stops nothing, and it stops them never. And you're not going to win a lot of football games if that's the case. Washington State, they played them close. It was a good game, and then the fourth quarter happened, and it was over. Gardner Minshew, 30 of 40, 430 passing yards, 5 touchdowns. You're not going to win if the opposing quarterback is doing that. You're not going to win. Oregon State so far this year has given up 77, 25 to an FCS team, 37, 35, 52, and 56. They're not a good defense.
No, they're not a good defense. They're not a good defense. But that's okay because we knew this was going to be a slow build for Oregon State. And the thing that they want to do is, you know, it's about putting points on the board. And Washington State, we know that's a program that knows how to put points on the board. That's just kind of what they do. They air the ball out. They have for the past few seasons. You know, there was a time that Washington State, the term was they cooged it. You know, that was a real thing that we used to say. And here on the show, that was like 3 years ago. You know, you can't really say that about this program anymore. But you look at a running game that's not even much improved, but it's 7 times better than what it was last season.
That's like 100 times better.
You look at a passing game.
And that was with Ryan Nall, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at a passing game that was really non-existent since,
Sean Mannion.
Since Sean Mannion left. Thank you so much. All of a sudden, man, they're putting up 30-plus a game, you know, all of a sudden. So Oregon State is a team that I think is right there, and they just continue to get better. They got better offensively. I think going into next year, they're going to get better defensively. So at least that's the hope. Because for right now, I'm not gonna say I'm good with them getting beat like that, but you're putting up, you know, 30-35, you know, points a game. Like that's always a good thing.
Well, so here was the question. I posted on Facebook.com/1080TheFan too, and you can text in Better You Today text line 55305 with your answers. If you're a Beaver fan. I just said, are you as optimistic as you were earlier in the year? Because early in the season, you had, although it was atrocious, it was also a kind of positive a performance, scoring 31 points against Ohio State and being close in that game early. It was just kind of a, oh, well, maybe this isn't so bad. And then you beat the FCS team in Southern Utah, and then you should probably beat Nevada, get close, and have the weird field goal 2 timeout thing that you had at the late part of that game. And so there was optimism because the team was getting turned around, and instantly under Jonathan Smith, you could see the offense had a huge difference in the field. But it's been a couple of bad losses in a row. They're still giving up what feels like 900 yards a game. And my question was just very simply, is the optimism fading? Because it just doesn't look like Oregon State's going to win another game this year. They only have one win, and they have to play Cal, a ranked Colorado, USC, a ranked Stanford, a ranked Washington, and Oregon left. They're not going to win a game. They're not going to win a game.
No.
You're going to be a one-win team this year. but yet it's going to look improved. And that's why I asked the question, do you still feel optimism, or does one win in a season just make you as depressed as you were last year if you're a Beaver fan?
Oh, one win is going to make you even more depressed, because you, when you see all of the improvement and still you're in a worse predicament than you were the year before, I think that's going to make you a little bit more depressed. However, I don't think it should. Like, I mean, last year you saw a team that was just not, or last couple of years that was just not competitive, like even a little bit. There was a, people thought, man, there was a chance they were going to win that game last night. Like that could have went Oregon State's way. It just didn't. Like at the end of the day, they didn't have enough on defense to be able to stop what Washington State could put through the air. And that was an issue. If they can figure that part out, man, you're looking at a team who could be really, really good in the Pac-12. So, I mean, it's going to take time. And again, the end of your season is brutal. You're going to play a Cal team with Wilcox, or Justin Wilcox, who, man, really got things moving over there. You're playing a Colorado team who's sneaky underrated in the Pac-12. Nobody ever really talks about Colorado as a good Pac-12 team. I think a lot of people forget that Colorado's even in the Pac-12. But
they got Steven Montez, the quarterback, playing
really
well.
And Montez is playing his butt off this season, man. USC is, for as bad as they've been, they're still USC, and they're just more talented than whatever Oregon State has. Stanford is still Stanford, UW, and then Oregon. So the end of their season sucks. Like, I mean, four of their last six games are against ranked, you know,
the top teams in the
top teams in the Pac-12. So it's going to be a battle, but at the same time, as long as they're competitive in those games and you don't see just Oregon State lay down like they have in the past, man, I'm okay with it.
Here are some of the comments that we got on Facebook on this post that I put up there so far. 2 to 3 year process. I feel good that they have made some improvement year over year. Defensively, they need to get better at tackling and defending in the secondary. At the end of the day, I'm a Beaver fan, win or lose, no matter what. Good first half yesterday. Love the special teams play and the trick plays. Solid at running back. Yeah, absolutely. That's a very positive way to look at it. There have been a lot of positives in special teams and offense, not so much in the defense, as he mentions there. I think it's great that they scored 14 against Ohio State starters and put 37 on Wazoo, which was a highly rated defense. I like that they don't roll over and the second something goes wrong. Unfortunately, they can't tackle, can't stop a nosebleed. Losing the Poly pipeline when Satake left is brutal to the defense. That's true. Good point. It's going to take a great couple of recruiting classes to fix. They stink right now, but I went to school during Cragthorpe and Pettibone. They're better than that. The challenge is to get significantly better and be a competitive team again, which they have not been in many years. That is true. I didn't consider that, but losing Kalani Sitake to be the head coach at BYU, you lose the Poly pipeline, and that is huge in this area. You get a lot of really good Polynesian defenders in the Northwest and in the Pac-12.
A lot of big
general
boys coming to Oregon State and to the Pac-12.
From American Samoa, et cetera, yeah.
And I honestly think, I don't think the tackling thing is just an Oregon State problem. I think that's a, man, Oregon State Pac-12 issue. Like, there's an issue tackling downfield. You know, once receivers, or once they get in the open space, that's usually when guys can't figure out how to make stops. And that's rampant through the Pac-12. That's the reason the Pac-12 loses games against the ACC and against, you know, any other, the SEC, whenever they play them, is because at the end of the day, they can do all the other skilled things, right? They just can't tackle. Tackling is a big issue.
So moving forward, let's just assume they win the one game this year, right? Maybe they steal one from Cal or Colorado or something. Maybe it's one of those kind of games. But let's just say, because it's how it looks, one game. They win one game. Moving forward, how quickly, if we're assuming Jonathan Smith's doing the right thing, which it does seem like he is, recruiting well or better, and, you know, changing the way that the team's vibe is after Gary Anderson leaves, is it going to be a 5-year process? Is it going to be a 2-year process? Is it not going to happen? When do you see, in your mind's eye, Oregon State being able to compete again?
I don't think it's far off. I mean, I honestly don't think you're far off. We've talked about it all the time in culture. Right now, Jonathan Smith is creating a culture that, man, looks like people want to be a part of. And the one thing he's doing is he's starting to recruit kids that live in Oregon. He's starting to recruit the kids that are local. So he's not really going to California, which is, you know, he is. But he's trying to go right in his own backyard and get some of these big boys to go out there. And I think that's a good thing. So I don't think I don't think you're that far off if you're Oregon State. You've already seen in a year the offense go from mediocre to okay, well, yeah, if you could figure out a way to stop people, then you may, those games may be a little bit different. And so you're right where you want to be right now. I think people thought it was going to be a struggle because you're still not Oregon. You're still not Stanford, and you're still not UW. And they just all happen to be in the exact same part of the Pac-12 as you. So they all happen to be in the North. So there's going to be some work there, but I don't think it's 5 years off. I'm thinking maybe two or three.
Some text on the Better You Today text line 55305. Jim, one of our, he says Jim the P2. OSU alumni, these kids are showing improvement each game. When they get some players in the future on both sides of the ball, this is going to be a pretty impressive team. The coaching staff has done excellent work with these kids. I seriously think the Civil War could be their second win at home. All jacked up, and you know Jonathan Smith wants to put a stamp on it. That game has been closer in recent years, closer than it should have been, but I'm not sure that's going to be a win at home, although it would be one hell of a story if they did beat Oregon in the Civil War this year. But I agree with that. It has to come down to recruiting. You're right. They are getting kids out of the state of Oregon, although not necessarily the highest ranked kids, but starting that process now and getting guys in the state to be interested in going is going to change when you have a really good recruiting year in the state, and then you see a lot of the kids going to Oregon State. Compared to the Gary Anderson regime, everything is trending upwards. It will take a year or two to replace Gary Anderson's recruits on the defensive side of the ball. They've already replaced some of the offensive personnel. So, yes, things are looking better. That is true. The one thing with the new coach that you always have to remember is that it's the previous coach's kids for almost 2 years before you start getting your guys in there. And that's why it baffles me when guys get fired after a year or two in college because they didn't even get a chance to put their own stamp on the program. And yeah, you're right. Jonathan Smith's already doing a great job in that regard. So thank you for the text and thanks for the Facebook post if you guys are listening from Facebook as well. But still some optimism with Oregon State despite looking like a potential one or two win team this year. All right, coming up next, it is time for the Hate It or Love It segment. But first, Jesse at Sports Center.
Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
One text I want to read before we get into Hate It or Love It that came in last segment on the Better You Today text line 55305. What's the goal? Bowl eligible? A couple of years, sure. If you're talking about perennial Pac-12 contenders, I don't think that is a realistic goal. It's not. I am talking more just being a competitive team who can be potentially in every game, if you know what I mean. So bowl eligible, more like that. You're right. Perennial Pac-12 contender is so far away that it seems unattainable. That's not to say it is unattainable because anything can happen with the right coach and the right players and a special quarterback and stuff like that. We've seen iffy teams become good teams, at least for a little bit. But I'm talking more about bowl eligible.
Yeah.
Six wins.
Bowl eligible is really what you're looking at. I mean, I don't think you're going to find them, you know, competing for any Pac-12, you know, North championship or Pac-12 title, you know, in general. You're really looking for them to just be competitive and right now make some bowl games. And once they make some bowl games, then I think the goal will start becoming win the North.
All right, Rashad won last week, so you get to pick who goes when.
I'll go first.
Okay. And
I like it. There's a little shade there with the K. I see it.
Yeah.
I know you like to go second, man. I like to go first.
All right. Cool. Well, Jesse, he will award us points if we are answering the question well. And at the end, the winner gets to host the last segment. So, Jesse, go ahead and get started.
Can I just say, I just got a couple comments really quick. One, Smith-Schuster, is he better than Antonio Brown at this point? Just caught another touchdown
in the
season?
Yes, he is. Like, yes, he is.
Right now, he is.
Like, that's just ridiculous to me. And there's two, a reason, though. You guys, ooh, I think, missed the touchdown celebration he just had.
Was he giving birth to the ball?
He was giving birth to the ball.
Yeah. I saw a half second of it.
I just got to say that is my most disappointing touchdown celebration of the season. I do not like that one. It was weird. That was just so weird. All right. Moving on into Hate It or Love It. We actually, based on conversation that you guys had on this player already in the show, it just made for a natural Hate It or Love It topic because I already had it on the Hate It or Love It sheet, and that is Odell Beckham Jr. Now, he's catching balls this year. He's getting yardage this year. But where have all the touchdowns gone? Because he is not getting touchdowns this season. He has failed to get in the end zone thus far. Love or hate, Odell Beckham Jr. will still catch 9 or more touchdowns this season.
Hate, is Eli still his quarterback? Then no. I mean, you're looking at the most talented receiver they have in the NFL, I think. You know, he's somebody who's not afraid to come across the middle, especially being as small as he is in comparison to a lot of receivers. You see a lot of guys that are much bigger than him that won't try to do that, you know, that drag across the middle or that slant or, you know, that skinny post, and he has no problem doing it. The only thing is, if he's going to get touchdowns, it's going to come from his own accord. It's going to be that 3-yard slant that he takes for 60 yards. It's going to be some, you know, 60-yard bomb that he's going to be able to catch, just because I don't think Eli is in a position right now to spread the ball across the field as much as he has. And you're looking at a Giants team that still doesn't have all the offensive weapons that you really expect them to be able to, you know, to do something. You would think that Odell Beckham would have most of their team's touchdowns right now. And Sterling Shepard is still somebody that they're trying to really lean upon to do that. And you got guys like Hunter Sharp and Roger Lewis. None of those guys scream superstar. And you still can't figure out a way to get Odell Beckham Jr. the ball. So because of that, I think he's going to struggle a little bit. I think he'll get about 5 to 6 touchdowns this season. But the usual 13 to 14 that we're used to seeing from him when he's a fully healthy player, I don't think it's going to happen because his quarterback isn't able anymore.
I'm going to say hate as well. And this is for one very, very simple reason. Eli Manning can't throw the ball deep anymore. He can't. And that is when Odell Beckham Jr. got his touchdowns. When you're the number one wide receiver and you have issues getting close to the red zone touchdowns, then you're not going to get them when a guy can't throw the ball deep. That's why we see Julio Jones having issues getting touchdowns too. He just doesn't get really great. He doesn't get open in the red zone that often. Odell Beckham Jr. used his athletic ability to get into the end zone on catches, not getting like jump balls in the corner of the end zone. A lot of those underneath routes are great for the end zone, or tight ends, or even running back running routes are great for the red zone. That's not what Odell Beckham Jr. is going to do. And the Giants, because Eli Manning can't throw the ball that far, is going short dink and dunk offense. And that's not going to lead to a lot of Odell Beckham Jr. touchdowns. That doesn't mean it's going to be a bad season for him. But touchdown-wise, he's not going to get them. And we're also seeing a very big difference in touchdowns in the NFL in general at the wide receiver position. It's not being valued the same way as long as they just get catches and yards. Touchdowns are getting spread around a lot.
Well, LeGarrette Blount just got his second touchdown of the game a day. I think he has like 5 yards rushing, though. So, you know, on like 6 attempts, he sucks. all right. Well, actually, that's a really good segue because I have LeGarrette Blount in this week's Love or Hate It.
Nice.
And that is, Kerryon Johnson has been averaging over 5 yards a carry in every game this season. That's kind of insane when you think about it. And he has had enough touches at this point where maybe that mean should have come back to the norm, especially the week he had, I believe, 18 carries. He still averaged over 5 yards a carry, broke the 100-yard barrier that week. Love or hate, despite the fact he's splitting touches with LeGarrette Blount, Kerryon Johnson will force Matt Patricia to bench Blount by week 8.
I'm gonna hate it. Just because LeGarrette Blount is still a bruiser. Kerryon Johnson is a very good running back and has played well so far. But LeGarrette Blount is still the guy that, like you just saw on the goal line, when you need to get that score and somebody to punch it in, he's going to be that. He's the closest thing that the NFL has had to a beast mode in the past few years. You look at guys like Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara and the guys that have really come to the forefront. Man, LeGarrette Blount has been doing this for multiple teams that he's played for the past 10 years, man. He's come a long way since he punched out a guy at Boise State, and this is just kind of what he does. And while Kerryon Johnson, he's had, you know, he has, what, 216 yards and one touchdown so far in this season. I think he's still going to be a factor, but he's not. I think he might get even a bulk of the carries, but when it comes down to getting to the red zone, getting right down to the goal line, I think LeGarrette Blount is still going to be the guy. And then Kerryon is in a position to where you can't be, you know, just average. You know, Theo Riddick, who isn't a great running back, he's still on that roster. Amir Abdullah, who all of us kind of make fun of, he's still on that roster. So they've got a lot of options there, but I think LeGarrette is still going to be the number one. Kerryon has got to be okay with kind of being the lightning in that duo. He's going to be the Tevin Coleman of the two for this year.
I hate it as well, but it's not for the same reason Rashad said. I think Kerryon Johnson is the number one, but you will always see offenses use these big workhorse backs at the goal line now because the other guys are just smaller and they want to keep them healthy too. There's a lot of hard hits at the goal line. And when you got LeGarrette Blount, who can just take like 6 tacklers with him, you'd rather have that than Kerryon Johnson hurt his knee because he gets hit by one guy and gets it bent awkwardly. You see this in offenses all over the place. We talked about the Ravens earlier. Buck Allen is a little bit of a bigger, more physical running back than Alex Collins is, and he gets the goal line work. Sometimes it has to do with pass blocking. Sometimes it has to do with guys who, on a fake, are able to stop the giant rush of humanity that comes from the linebackers and keep the quarterback upright for 2 seconds so he can pass the ball into the end zone. LeGarrette Blount's a great pass blocker, obviously. Buck Allen, also a good pass blocker. So that's going to keep him in the offense as well. And to the whole thunder and lightning kind of thing, I think you do like to keep a little bit of that for the defense to stay, keep off guard, to get a guy who's a little bit more of a bruiser versus a guy who's a quick back who can cut quickly. So I think that's why teams like to do it. It's about keeping them healthy and about keeping defenses off the edge. Or, sorry, off out of the whatever the word is. Words. I'm watching the Isaiah Crowell run like a 90-yard touchdown in, distracted.
Well, that was depressing. Unfortunate.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. What do we have?
Isaiah Crowell,
I do. I had to start him this week. I didn't want to. But thank you, Isaiah. Appreciate you, bro.
All right. Tied. We're tied. Well then. Hey, you know what? Let's stay in the same division that we were just talking about. It's an interesting division this year, especially with the emergence of that defense in Chicago. Now, we knew it was good, but with the addition of Khalil Mack, this defense is ridiculous. With that said, Aaron Rodgers has been banged up in Green Bay. The wide receiving core is a mess right now. The running backs, that is a committee of, well, that's just a plain old committee. Clay Matthews can't sack quarterbacks anymore because he'll get a flag every time. Love or hate, Green Bay will fail to make the playoffs this season.
Mm, wow.
I think this is the toughest one I've given you so far.
I gotta love it, man. Unfortunately, it's just more of a matter of where Aaron Rodgers happens to be right now, which is playing in the NFC. There are just too many good teams around for him to really kind of crack the ceiling. Really, we've seen the Packers in the past make the playoffs just based on Aaron Rodgers' heroics behind his, you know, him being the Hail Mary God, behind guys like Jordy Nelson, who's no longer there, and that was really one of his security blankets. And, you know, you have a running back, again, by committee, but now it's just a group of guys and nobody that really stands out. You still don't have a receiver that really stands out for you. I don't really think that the whole Jimmy Graham thing didn't work out the way I think most people kind of thought it would. Then you look at a conference that also has the Philadelphia Eagles, and it also has the Minnesota Vikings and the Falcons and the Panthers and Saints and Rams and, you know, and even, you know, Seahawks, if they can happen to make, you know, some type of run. I think there's just too many talented teams in the NFC right now for Aaron Rodgers and his, you know, to him being the GOAT to kind of carry them. We know he's the most talented quarterback in the league. I don't think there's any question there, but I don't think his talent is enough to carry this roster that he has into the playoffs.
I'm going to go ahead and say hate, because we've talked about all these things already, right? How bad that the Packers look and how Aaron Rodgers is hurt and the injuries that are happening. They're still in second place in the division. They're still 2-1-1. They're still scoring more points than the other teams. They have a +9 different point differential right now. And the NFC might be very good, but here's the honest truth of it. Nobody but the Rams is coming out of the NFC West, and nobody but whoever wins the NFC East, I'm still going to assume the Eagles, is coming out of the East. So it's going to be down to wild card teams in the North and the South, and you've got the Bears, Packers, and Vikings all playing well. Bears might come back down to earth, but I do like them a lot. And then in the South, the teams aren't playing as well as we thought. The Falcons are 1-3. I don't trust the Panthers. So you might get all the wildcard teams in the NFC out of the one division. It might be Bears, Packers, and Vikings all out of the NFC North. And don't forget the Lions, whose offense is still actually pretty good despite being 1-3. The fact that Aaron Rodgers is 2-1-1 with how bad of a start this season has been is just more proof of how amazing Aaron Rodgers is. He's playing through a knee injury, and he's still leading this team to wins. Even if they're ugly, they're still winning. And there's something about having a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers that, to me, means that he is going to get back to the playoffs, even if they lose in the first round. I think that is a huge thing. Never overestimate the special ability that Aaron Rodgers has to will that team to a victory. Getting Aaron Jones back is huge. They'll actually have a running game again, finally, which should help the passing game as well. So I will say, hey, they will make the playoffs.
All right. Well, perfect amount of time. Just ran out of
the music.
The music there. So today's winner, tie going to the round 3. And we don't have one. It's a tie. Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. I thought we had a winner. Nope. We both tied.
Paper, rock, scissors.
Should we both get to host the last segment?
We could do a tie. We still have a tiebreaker.
Yeah, this isn't soccer. This is NFL regular season.
So let's put the music back on temporarily.
All right. Temporarily put the hater to love it music back on. And tie.
Get out. Here we go.
All right. Final one. I'm glad I actually came up with
one. We were just talking about ties with the Packers, too. Yeah. 2-1-1.
All right, we're going to go bring back Le'Veon Bell because this drama continues to change. He's not coming and playing. He's going to be traded. Now he's coming back, but the Steelers are still willing to trade him. Love or hate? Despite Bell saying he will return week 8, the Steelers will still trade the Pro Bowl back.
Let's make this a lightning round. 30 seconds.
I think the Steelers see that they're still an issue, even though James Conner did score today. I think they still see they have an issue. How about this? The number one receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers is not Antonio Brown. You know who it is? It's Juju Smith-Schuster. He's a top 10 receiver. Do you know where Antonio Brown is in the NFL as far as receiving yards? He's 35th. That means there's 34 other guys in the league that are better than Antonio Brown right now. When did we ever think that was a problem? You know why it's a problem? Because they don't have Le'Veon Bell there to take some of the attention off of Antonio Brown. Now you know that's your only real playmaker on the field, the one that can really be lightning in a bottle for you, and you have to double team him and sometimes triple team him. Now you can't do that. So now all the attention is paid to him. Man, they're shutting things off for him. Juju Smith-Schuster is thriving because of it. But the run game is just not the same. James Conner does different stuff.
I hate it as well. That's because the Steelers want to win while Ben Roethlisberger is still on the team. They want to be able to say, hey, he's going to retire soon. We have to milk every ounce of great quarterback that we have left in him, and they need a running back to do that. James Conner has not proven to be that guy outside of one or two games early in the season. Le'Veon Bell will be that guy. He creates so much balance on that offense. And I think Rashad is right that having him back is going to help Antonio Brown quite a bit as well. So I'm going to go ahead and say hate that they trade him. Plus, I don't think any team's going to give him the value that they want for him because he's going to demand a lot of value. And they're going to want to at least try to get to the playoffs with Ben Roethlisberger there for one last season.
Giants are really bad.
I'm playing the Panthers defense. That was the stupidest thing I've ever seen. That caused the Panthers defensive touchdown.
Gosh, they're so bad.
All right, today's winner, Mike Lynch.
Oh, come on.
Seriously, that play by the Giants. They had Odell Beckham Jr. as a punt returner. It bounces off his leg. The other guy catches it. Then he drops it. And then it kicks off another guy's foot into the end zone. And it's a touchdown for the Panthers. So that's a really, really, really bad play. Also, can they just give a target to Julio Jones or Golden Tate, please? Neither of them have even been targeted once this game. Cool, thanks. Coming up next, we'll figure it out. This is Football Sunday on The Fan.
Football Sunday with Mike and Rashad on 1080 The Fan.
Only a couple minutes left for us here. We've got the pregame of the Seahawks coming up right after us. Ooh, holy cow, that was a hit. And a penalty, I suppose. Right after us, we got the pregame for the Seahawks right at 11 o'clock. So we'll just do a quick segment here. One thing, and it's funny, we were just talking about this in the break. The weird thing about fantasy football is that it doesn't really change anything when your players score, but having your players score early just feels so much better than having to wait and try to come from behind.
Oh, absolutely.
Like at the moment, I have 10 points because Julio Jones and Golden Tate have had zero targets so far. The guy I'm playing is 41 points, although our projections are still close. And I'm sweating it.
That's usually how it goes, man. Like,
but it's the first half, you know?
I've got a few people playing, and I'm still winning because I had James White that had a great night the other night. But, yeah, that's a touchdown if I've ever seen one.
Robbie Anderson, wide open.
I just feel so bad. I helped my mom manage her fantasy team. She got one, and I was like, Robbie Anderson, it's time to drop him.
Did he just hurt his knee jumping into the end zone?
No. Looks good.
All right. It's funny how it works like that because I hate having to wait on Monday night players. Like this week, I have all my players on Sunday. He's got Drew Brees Monday night. That's going to suck having to watch Drew Brees and hope that he doesn't score a certain amount of points or or whatever the case may be. So it's crazy.
Yeah, it's fantasy. You know, it's supposed to give you, I think anxiety is just a part of the whole process, you know, making sure that you're going to have an opportunity to win it, to win a game, or making sure that, you know, just all, you're constantly looking at your, you know, your team and the other guy's team, and you don't care about what happens to the rest of the league. You're just looking at yours until it's playoff time. So the one thing I hate is, like, my team is playing my actual team, like I'm watching the Pats play, but the person I'm playing in fantasy has someone from the Patriots, you know, team. So I'm rooting basically against my own guys to do well because I don't want to lose in fantasy. Like, that's the part that sucks. That's a little, I still haven't gotten used to that part.
Yeah, you gotta adjust your brain for that a little bit and just accept that maybe the guys on the other team or on your team will hurt you because you want your team to win.
I remember one specific moment. It was a couple of years ago. I was sitting here in the control room and I was watching the Arizona Cardinals and the Denver Broncos. And Andre Ellington catches this like 60-yard touchdown pass, runs right down the sidelines, and I'm going crazy. I'm just like, yes! Because it was like he hadn't become a thing yet, and I pulled him off the waiver wire, and he makes this big play for me, and then I was like, no!
I know. It's crazy. All right, we got to go. Seahawks coming up next. Pregame for that coming up right here at 11, right after us. We are off next week. We do not have a show next week because the Seahawks have a 10 a.m. kick game. We will be back the week after that, 9 to 11, as has been the case. We are not doing any other time but that this year, except for the early games for the Seahawks. So enjoy a weekend off. If you do have fantasy questions, tweet them at us at MikeLynch27, at TaylorMade503, at Jesse Osman, A-S-Z-M-A-N, and you can listen to Jesse's fantasy podcast as well that he's been tweeting out and get some advice from that. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your next weekend, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. This is Football Sunday on The Fan.
Omaha! 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 Omaha!
This one's for Pat!
Arr. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.